Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 174 of Her, the podcast where you'll hear everything, the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, her sexual fantasies. Yep, hold on to your seats. We're going to have a terrific show. And before we begin, just know that the episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's your reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show. This is going to be a wonderful show, real provocative. I want to hear your feedback. So I'll give you another warning at the end of the show to make certain to do that rate and review. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
So I just stumbled on the best book. It's called Tell Me What You Want, The Science of Sexual Desire and How It Can Help You Improve Your Sex Life. Yeah, you just wrote that one down, didn't you? I know you did that. The author is Dr. Justin Lay Miller, and we are just so honored to be able to have him on the show to explain the book and his work. He received his PhD in social psychology from Purdue University, and he's a research fellow at the Kinsey Institute and obviously author of this book. And as well, he's an award-winning educator. He is frequently interviewed by numerous media outlets. He's the go-to sexpert for Men's Health magazine, and it goes on and on. Dr. Lay Miller, welcome to the Her podcast.
Hi, Pam. Thanks for having me.
Hey, so how did you get interested in the topic of sexual fantasies in the first place?
Sure. I've actually been interested in sexual fantasies for a long time because I've been a sexuality educator for college students for the last decade. And I've also written a textbook on human sexuality where I had to exhaustively review the literature on sexual fantasies and a number of other topics. And what I found was that the more that I learned about sexual fantasies, the more questions I had. There just isn't a whole lot of research on this subject. And so I just created this whole list of questions and ultimately decided to conduct this large-scale survey to try and find out as much as I could about sexual fantasies today. So in addition to just answering some of these questions that had never been answered, I wanted to update our knowledge because the last major scientific review paper on sexual fantasies was published in the 1990s, and a lot has changed in our sex lives since then. So I look at this as an update and expansion of our knowledge on sexual fantasies.
And we thank you. I really mean that. Good God. I mean, I was going through the book and I was like, whoa, hello. You know, when all we have to rely on out there is 50 Shades of Grey, it's looking ugly, right? There's got to be a little something more to this. And it's so great that an academician like yourself, who is so highly credible, is going to gift us with all of this great wisdom here. So, okay, I know. All my listeners are out there going, okay, what are, you know, the top three fantasies that almost everyone has at one time or the other? All right, go for it.
Okay. So in order to find out the answer to that question, I surveyed almost 4,200 Americans from all 50 states, ranging in age from 18 to 87. They come from all different demographic backgrounds, political backgrounds, religious backgrounds. So it's a very diverse group of people who completed this exhaustive questionnaire about their biggest sexual fantasies of all time, as well as hundreds of people, places, and things they might have ever fantasized about. And one of the things I did was I looked at what people said their biggest fantasy of all time was, and I started to look for broader themes that emerged from that. And I found three themes that emerged that were widely shared. The first of these was multi-partner sex, so just having sex with multiple people at the same time, most commonly in the form of a threesome. So threesomes were actually the most popular sexual fantasy, and that was actually true for men and women. I also found that BDSM was a very popular fantasy theme, ranging from light bondage and spankings to more intense activities along the spectrum. And then the other major category that I saw was what I call novelty, adventure, and variety. So it's basically just breaking free of your sexual routine and trying something new and different, such as having sex in a new position or in a new setting, doing something other than just, say, missionary-style intercourse in your own bedroom.
Interesting. All right, you heard it all here. And everyone's scratching their head saying, yeah, that's me. Now, since we have so many women in our listening audience, I noticed that in your data, you said that women are more likely than men to report same-sex fantasies. Was that a surprise to you?
It wasn't a surprise to me based on the abundance of research I've seen on human sexuality. There's a large body of research suggesting that women seem to be a little bit more flexible than men when it comes to the gender of their partner. We also see in the data, not just my data, but there's lots of research out there on this, finding that women are more likely to identify as bisexual than men. That's not to say that all women are inherently bisexual, just that there seems to be somewhat more flexibility there with regard to the gender of the partner for women. Interestingly, we do see where men have a little bit more flexibility is in terms of what I call gender-bending fantasies, where men seem to be more willing to fantasize about playing with their gender role or expression in some way, such as by cross-dressing. So we see some interesting differences in the flexibility of men and women in their sexual fantasies.
Well, men want to cross-dress because, quite frankly, we have better clothes. I mean, come on, let's just be honest. I mean, what woman's going to just slap on a suit? Come on. I've often laughed about that. When I read that statistic about men are more likely to fantasize about cross-dressing and having sex with someone who is transgender, I was like, yeah, better clothes, better makeup, better everything. But there you have it. And then there was another one. Extroverts have more non-monogamous fantasies than introverts. Was that another non-shocker?
Yeah, that was interesting because it was part of the broader it was part of a broader pattern of results I found looking at how people's personalities are connected to their sexual fantasies. So the fact that extroverts or people who are more outgoing in everyday life tended to be more outgoing in their sexual fantasies wasn't particularly surprising. But I found a lot of interesting connections between our personalities and our sexual fantasies. So, for example, how much care and concern you have for other people in everyday life seems to play out in your sexual fantasies. So if you're more kind and considerate in real life, you care more about your partner's pleasure in your fantasies. If you're someone who is high in neuroticism and you're easily stressed out, you tend to play it safe in your sexual fantasies. And if you're someone who's very detail-oriented in real life, you tend to be detail-oriented in your fantasies. So our fantasies in a lot of ways seem to say a lot about us and our personality and sort of where we are in our lives right now.
Huh. All right. And so, but it's good to have fantasies, right? This is a healthy thing, right?
Sure. And the vast majority of people have sexual fantasies. So I found about 97% of the people I surveyed had sexual fantasies, and most people had them often. And people reported fantasizing for a wide range of reasons. People do it because it turns them on, or because it helps them to relax, or it creates a form of distraction. So there are lots of different reasons people fantasize, and by and large, such fantasies tend to be healthy things for us.
Interesting. So there was one thing that I was really curious about, and I know that this is a recurring theme in a lot of discussions about sexuality, and that is, what do most people get wrong about sex? What is that assumption that everyone's messing up here badly?
Oh, boy. I mean, there are so many things.
Well, you know, the long-term relationship that's always supposed to be, you know, just like the day you met him or that type of thing, that the passion should always be there, et cetera.
Right. And I definitely do talk about that in the book in particular, this idea that relationships should always be passionate and exciting. And if the passion disappears, that it means there's a problem with you or your partner or your relationship. And the truth of the matter is that if you want to keep passion alive in your relationship, it's something you have to work for. For whatever reason, passion just seems to decline naturally over time. And sex researchers think it has something to do with what's called the Coolidge effect, which is this tendency for us to become bored with sexual routines. So we need to have continued excitement added to our sex lives to keep those flames of passion going. And one of the ways that we can do this is through our sexual fantasies and by sharing and maybe even acting on some of those fantasies with our partner. That can be a great and healthy way to try and keep the passion going.
You know, I hear this constantly. This whole issue of, you know, of course it's, you know, this whole passion is going to wane over time. But, you know, the part that I never hear is that you're really supposed to work it and how to do that. Mm-hmm. And what are the actionable items? Well, you know, I think most people just stumble around and keep it to themselves because, quite frankly, you must know this. You're the expert. You're the sexpert. And then it's people don't like to talk about a lot of this. It's kind of awkward and embarrassing. Like, you know, things are getting a little boring at home and I don't know what to do. And then it's like, did I do something wrong? Is there something wrong with our marriage? And then there's a whole shame, blame, guilt thing. And then they just shut up and nothing gets done. So, you know, where do people really, I mean, obviously you brought this up in this book. This book is fabulous. And I think it's going to be end up being a terrific resource for people. I think what I'm really trying to say is, yeah, there are things you could do to make this better. What would be some really simple actionable items someone could do to kind of, you know, just get it going again, as it were, when things have just become, you know, very Coolidged out?
Right. So one of the most important things is just starting by introducing sex as a topic of conversation in your relationship. I think a lot of the problems that we have with our sex lives and relationships just come down to the fact that we're afraid to talk about sex. And we need to get over all of that shame and embarrassment and anxiety and be able to have sexual conversation. So start first by trying to break down those barriers to communication and find easy, non-threatening ways to start introducing the subject of sex and talking about it. And one way to do that might be to watch a steamy movie with your partner and then talk about it afterwards. Or you could even read excerpts from erotic novels or books, whatever works for you. It's just finding some way to start that conversation, to get it going, and then to turn it into a discussion about sexual desire and how you might try some new things in your relationship to spice it up. It's important when you're having these conversations with your partner not to come across as blaming them or attacking them or making them feel inadequate in some way, but rather you want to validate them and say, wouldn't it be fun if we tried this, or wouldn't it be hot if we tried that? And there are all kinds of ways you can do this, from playing a game with your partner to visiting a sex shop together. Just find something that you are comfortable with and something that your partner is likely to be comfortable with too, and go from there as your starting point.
Cool. And I think all of those things, those items and suggestions are really reasonable. I love this sort of segues a little bit into a question that apparently you're asked most frequently about sex, and that is, am I normal? You know, is this normal? How do you answer that?
Well, it can be a tough question to answer, but people ask me that all the time about their bodies, about whether they're masturbating too much or whether they're having enough sex. Or people ask the am I normal question in all kinds of different ways. And the way that I approach it is by giving people the data. I think the biggest issue that leads people to feel abnormal is this perception that that what they're doing is unusual in some way, and they don't have a reference point for it. It all comes down to a lack of sex education. So that's what I try to do when giving people answers, is just stick to the data. And I think ultimately that can often make us just feel much more normal about ourselves and our desires. And I think that's one of the big things that this book can do, is to help you realize you aren't alone in having the fantasies that you have. And here's some ways that you can go about expressing them in your relationship.
You know, in your book, you talk about new trends, the way we're now looking at and accepting diverse relationship structures, and not just monogamy with the same partner, but open relationships. We hear about this all the time now. There's really a trend, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, again, you're the sexpert, in what's going on in relationships with men and women in their 20s and 30s, how they're, as it were, coupling. How is that influencing sexuality?
Mm-hmm. So I think that our acceptance of diverse relationship structures is changing, and you can see this playing out in public opinion polls, where when people are asked about their approval of different forms of non-monogamy, you see that it's increasing. You also see that Google searches for polyamory and open relationships are on the rise as well. So there does seem to be greater interest there. And when you also look at the data in terms of how many people have ever had some type of sexually open relationship, it's much higher than most people would expect. In fact, there was a recent nationally representative study in the United States that found that 1 in 5 adults surveyed said that they had been in some type of sexually open relationship before. So it seems that a lot of people are experimenting with different forms of consensual non-monogamy. And for some people, that can be a very viable relationship alternative. I wouldn't say that consensual non-monogamy is right for everyone. I think that different types of relationships are right for different people based on your personalities and comfort level. So I think the key thing is just finding the type of relationship that works well for you.
Excellent. And, you know, so many people out there have kids, and the kids are, good grief, they're learning everything online. I think that from what you've been talking about, If the parents, whether they're married or partners or whatever, are having open communication about their sexuality, that there's a nice spillover effect to the kids, that they have a credible, comfortable, trusted resource to be able to ask questions and to open up discussions. I think that that's an important piece of your work, yes?
Absolutely. That's such an important point. Kids just don't have reliable places they can go to get good quality information about sex or to get their questions answered. One of the things that I think is shocking is that less than half of the states in the U.S. even require sex education. And the states that do, a small number of them require that it's medically accurate. And some states even say that certain topics are off limits in sex education courses, like sexual orientation. And even if a student asks a question about it, the teacher isn't allowed to answer it. So kids aren't getting their questions answered in school, and a lot of parents just feel too uncomfortable talking to their kids about sex. So that leads kids to go online and go to pornography, and that's becoming the default form of sex education for a lot of kids today. So I think we really need to work on opening those lines of communication between parents and their kids about sex so that they have a source, a trusted source they can go to ask their questions and get them answered.
Do you remember very recently there was some kind of a survey that was done on kids and sort of adolescents, but especially kids, on some of their most common online searches, and pornography was one of the top. And this is kids.
Mm-hmm.
This is before pre-adolescents. And then it begins to color, apparently, according to the researchers, how they really look at a relationship going forward. So that if you're not having the screaming, you know, sex that you see on the pornography, which is clearly all acted out and is quite the facade, if this is the only model you have to work with, and you're not having that, then this really turns into a hot mess in more ways than one. Have you bumped up against this?
Yeah, and there's definitely some truth to that. And my perspective is that porn can be part of a healthy sex life, but porn, when it's the only model that you have for sexuality, that can be unhealthy because you can get a lot of wrong ideas about what the human body is supposed to look like or what healthy sexual communication looks like or how the female orgasm works. There are so many misconceptions that it's possible to spread through pornography that people who are watching it need some context for it. So porn is really dangerous in the absence of sex education and in a culture where we just tell people that the only thing they should do is avoid sex. We need to teach people communication skills beyond just say no and give them the actual information and resources that they need to better understand their bodies and how sex works and how relationships work too.
You know, this is such a timely book that you've written, especially with the Me Too movement and people having relationships that are a bit troublesome, to say the least. Certainly, people acting out in the professional environment, not at home or within a personal context. So that's why I'm asking these questions about, as it were, what's normal? When do you really act on these kinds of fantasies, and making certain that you get absolute consensuality, that there's no lack of that, to say the least, both personally and professionally. I just think it's a really important topic now, with all the discussions on all things sexuality, sexual relationships, and how we're currently redefining what that's all about, especially with regard to respect and honoring each person. Have you felt that too?
Absolutely. And I call the book Tell Me What You Want for a reason, because it's really about sexual communication and how we can do this more effectively. I think one of the big problems we're facing and what underlies a lot of what led to the Me Too movement is the fact that a lot of us act when it comes to sex without really talking. And that is a really dangerous thing. We need to be able to communicate about sex, because if you can't communicate, how can you even do the most basic of all things, which is to obtain sexual consent? So we really, really need to go back and work on just breaking down those barriers to communication and making it easier to talk about sex from the get-go.
Excellent. I mean, so topical, say the least. Well, we've all been so loving what you have to say, Dr. Justin Lehmiller, who is the author of Tell Me What You Want, The Science of Sexual Desire and How It Can Help You Improve Your Sex Life. Dr. Lehmiller, what is the best website you want everyone to be able to just run on over now online and scope out to learn more about the book and also your work?
So I run a blog. It's called Sex and Psychology, and you can get to it by going to sexandpsychology.com. And basically, I update it several times a week with the latest research on sexuality and relationships written for a general audience. I think it's very important for us to have ongoing adult sex and relationship education, and that's what I try to do through this blog.
Oh, thank heavens. You know, like I said, we need more credible resources out there. With all due respect to 50 Shades of Grey, we need you. And so thank you again so much for being on the Herb Podcast, Dr. Justin Lehmiller. Listen, everyone out there, you've heard it all now. This is fabulous. Grab the book, run to the website, learn more, read the blog, stay up with them. And right now, hop on over to iTunes and rate and review this show, because we want to hear from you. Your feedback is absolutely priceless to us. Hey, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Herb Podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every episode of the Herb Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today, and stay well.